here we are, everyone, and we're going to be launching into practical work on self. And for those on television, I'm holding the book up. It's the book by E.J. Gold. And Teresa is here, and she's on the teleconference, and she's going to be guiding us through these next few chapters. So why don't you go ahead and get us started, okay?
Okay, this is our first practical work on self course together in this format on both the Justin TV and on the conference call. And I'm Teresa Dietze. I've practiced healing work in Seattle, and I've led a practical work on self group before and been involved with different kinds of spiritual and healing work for about 33 years. And David has been doing practical work on self groups and very spiritual work for at least that long, probably longer. And today we will be discussing chapter one in practical work on self, and that chapter is called Awakening the Machine. So, David, what can you tell us about Awakening the Machine?
Well, before we get started, what I'd actually like to do, and it's more for me than maybe anybody, I'd actually like to run through a little exercise, and if we can all do it, it's just a way for me to help me and everybody, let's just say, get rid of the road dust from the world and joining in together as the group. And I call it dropping the facial mask. And the way we're going to do it is, I'm just going to sit comfortably, whatever is a simple way for you to sit. This will just take about 2 minutes or so. And just sit comfortably. And now take your attention and place your attention on your facial mask. Good. Take that attention now and just notice the way the muscles are at the very top of the forehead. Gently, like a very fine brush, just brush it across there and relax those muscles. Come back across through the middle of that forehead and relax those muscles. Now come across to the muscles just above the eyes and relax those. And just place your attention on the eyes themselves, one then the other, and relax the muscles around those. Okay? And let's come down to the cheek muscles, the top of the cheek, and bring that attention brush down toward, like just along the back line of the jaw. Good. Bring it forward to the muscles just above the mouth and place your attention on the muscles in the mouth, at the mouth, in the lips, your lips. Relax. Okay. And just like kind of an overall brush of attention on the face. And just relax it for just a moment. Okay, good. That's great. Thanks for doing that and giving me the opportunity to do it as well. And and now, Teresa, to answer your question, maybe you can help me along by reading the header of the chapter. If you have a copy of the book, we're actually just on chapter one, and we're going to begin right on page one. So maybe you can start us off that way?
Of course. Chapter one, Awakening the Machine. The sleeping machine does not and cannot produce transformation. A change in being is obtained only through intense efforts and struggle against our tendency to fall into a state of identification with the machine's sleep.
The chapter one, in many ways, is a it's actually unfair in a lot of ways, and the material in chapter one is very thick. And in fact, several of you were in the class that we finished about a month ago called The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus. And that's about a, 25-week course or something where we talked about the interplay of the sleeping machine and the being and the essential self. Very, very interesting, but in great detail. Chapter one tries to do it in 20 pages. So
okay, David, the new people, can you please say what the sleeping machine is so that they're not lost?
I understand that,
okay.
And that's where we're going to get to, and I'm just giving you, a little bit of a header on it. It's a long conversation, but actually, as you read through this particular chapter, we're saved at the end of it, because we're given a simple way out of that conversation, in effect. All right, so what is meant by the sleeping machine in this particular context is that, first of all, the human biological machine in this context is thought of as the physical machine, this body that we're in. It's the mental chatter, it's the mental system that we have, and the emotions that we have as we find ourselves in life, in a sense. As it is, there we are. We catch ourselves in that manner with this machine. In a sense, we found ourselves like this. Here we are. We went through life. We went through whatever training we did, schools, etc. And now here we are for some reason with this itch to do something different and to awaken in different ways. And for some people, I know you've been through this conversation many, many a time, but it is always afresh to bring the attention back on the fact that there's a physical human body. And what is the state of affairs normally is that we aren't conscious of what we're doing. And there's so many layers of unconscious behavior. And it's that form of unconsciousness that drives us, that we accept as a way to get through life, in a sense. That's our ticket. And so as long as it remains unconscious and reactive, then it remains in a sleeping state. Here's an interesting example from the point of view of mentation or the thinking part. A lot of our thinking winds up being just simply associative thinking. We may see something, and then it makes us think of this other thing, which is it's associated for us, and then we think of another thing and the consequences of that thing, and da-da-da-da. And generally, we call that thinking. And in the same way, we're subject in many of the same ways with our emotions, whereby we often don't have a intentional emotion. We have a reaction, a reactivity to life around us. I like this. I don't like this. That was good. That was bad. That was painful. That was joyful, or pleasurable, rather, I should say. And so a lot of the times it's just the reactivity is how we get through things. So what I'd like to do is jump a little bit into the chapter, maybe read a few paragraphs here and there, and continue to answer that question, Teresa, if that makes sense to you.
Yes, of course. That's a good idea. So would you like me to read?
No, I think I'm gonna jump into it myself. And I'm going to go ahead and skip ahead to page 2. at the bottom of page 2, if you have the book, you can follow along. The very second to the last paragraph, it says, there are four definite forms of consciousness that are possible to us. Horizontal sleep, waking sleep, the awakened state, and then something called transformation of the being. Horizontal sleep and waking state, walking sleep, we can already produce in ourselves without help from a school. It is the third form of consciousness, called the awakened state, which we attribute to ourselves, but which we ordinarily cannot possess, because it requires the awakening of the biological machine. So we have two terms blasting around out there. One is the sleeping machine, and then the awakened machine. What the heck does that mean? Well, we're going to discover that as we walk our way through here. We must understand right from the very beginning that this third form of consciousness is not really part of our repertoire, yet it is the awakened state, is a form of consciousness which is so basic to life that we ought to be taught this as children. And then jumping ahead, it's, if civilization lived up to its name, we would not now be forced to begin our work at such a pathetically low level. But we must find the courage to realize where we actually stand, where we actually stand, and then begin from there. Isn't that refreshing? Like, wherever we're at, you know, wherever we're at in this, that's where we're at, okay? This kind of work is not a grading system. There's beginning and intermediate and so on. I mean, but that comes from yourself, and we're going to have some really good hints as we go along. In our ordinary or sleeping consciousness, it may resemble a high steel worker who has fallen asleep while working. Yet because our work continues and the machine somehow manages to keep its balance, we do not realize that we have fallen into an ambulatory hypnosis. The machine is conditioned to continue its mental, emotional, and physical activities, three different things, entirely mechanically. Ordinary activities of the machine do not require our attention or presence, even to the smallest degree. And you might say, well, how could that be? How could it be that I get all these complex things done? Well, we'll see. You do, and I do, and we all do. So how can it be? Skipping ahead now to the bottom of page 4, we will leave the purpose of awakening the machine until later. It should be enough in the beginning to actually experience the sleep of the machine and to see that this situation can be changed by specific methods, which anyone can do with a little practice. Anyone can do. Here is the most surprising little experiment you will ever encounter, by which you can see for yourself the immediate necessity for awakening the machine. Okay. Now, using your ordinary visual apparatus, your eyes, follow as intensely as possible the motion of the second hand of a clock. So now, E.J. Gold, the author, is introducing to us one exercise. So here's an exercise to bring to bear on this topic that we're talking about, this in chapter 1 called Awakening the Machine. So what is the exercise? Find a clock that has a second hand, preferably if it's a smooth swept second hand, not the kind that goes tick, 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 but if possible. Take such a clock. Do this when you can, when you get a chance, and just watch it for 5 minutes. While you're watching it, pay attention to your presence. What's your body doing? What do you feel like? What's the temperature in the room? But continue to watch the clock and see what happens. See what happens, and you'll see that sometimes, or maybe even often, we just get swept away into we forget to do it. It seems so bloody simple, doesn't it? When we first begin our efforts to awaken the machine, the only immediate result is that we soon see that the machine's will to sleep is far more powerful and continuous than our will to awaken the machine. At first, the non-phenomenal self, which can do nothing about this except to exert the only will it really has, called the will of attention. Okay?
So what is the non-phenomenal self?
Okay, so we have our physical self here. We have our physical body, and it has a mentation process. It has emotion, so-called emotions and things like that. But then there's like an overlay onto that. And the overlay is what we will be using a term called the essential self or the being. I call it the heart of the matter. That's kind of like who we are. And we're trying to create a space for that to operate in, that where it becomes, has the ability to come further and further to the forefront. Now, it is non-phenomenal in that its basis is not in the phenomenology or of extension.
Of things and stuff.
Pardon?
Of things. It's not of things and stuff. Phenomena is like things and stuff. The non-phenomenal self is not things and stuff. It's being.
Yeah, and maybe another way to look at it, and the way that we go into great detail and when we're doing the human biological machine courses, it is a different electrical body. So for me, I look at the essential self as being an electrical body that is married to the physical body. That's our gift in a sense. We're given that gift for this particular life. Now I'm skipping ahead to page number 6 and in the middle. Because a sleeping machine cannot function as a transformational apparatus, the soul, which is solely and entirely a product of transformation. Now, the word the soul, essential self, non-phenomenal self, for the moment we're just saying those are the same words, okay? So the soul cannot form, and even if it could, without the foundation and food for evolution, it could not evolve. So what do we mean by food for evolution?
What do we mean by we don't have a soul until we've done the work? That's what it sounds like.
Well, you know, I keep going back and forth on that, and I like that kind of formulation, but it's like potential. It's there, right? It's potentially there, and if we do some work on ourselves and start to work with our attention, and place the attention in the way we're going to talk about as we go through this chapter, it starts to come alive. So you're right in a certain way. There is no soul, but there's no soul. It's still in bed.
It's like we don't have access to it.
Don't have access to it. It hasn't had its cup of coffee yet.
Well, it's not. We don't have Congress with it. We're not in conversation with it. We don't have a way of connecting with our soul and identifying with it, and it's kind of something that's out there, that's vague to us, in the same way, in the sense that the sleep of the machine is vague to us, and we're not really clear that we're asleep. We're not really clear that we're asleep, and we're not really clear that that part of ourselves that is the soul is awake.
Correct. And so what we are going to attempt to do is to start clarifying that, but in extremely simple terms, because we can then actually do it. So jumping ahead to page 7, if we lack the will to keep our source of attention from being seduced into the outer world attractions, we will be far too busy from these seductions to be bothered with the task of using our attention to awaken the machine. So if we're constantly attached to the outside, we can't do this. It's hard. the powerful form of seduction, this is now how the sleeping machine operates, which breaks our will of attention, is called world hypnosis, or Maya. Maya is often understood to mean that the world is an illusion. However, we must understand it is not the world that is an illusion, but it's our identification with the phenomenal world that is our issue. That's the issue at hand here. It's how identified do we get with it? And I don't know that I've actually ever really defined for myself the world the word identified, but it's what I mean by it. It's as if I'm carried into the world. I'm carried into the things outside as that's my life. That is reality. That's what defines me, or how I interact with it defines me.
So daily life is in itself is the seduction, and the way that we view ourselves is the seduction. Doesn't have to even mean that we're tempted by anything in particular. It can just mean, yeah.
Yeah, this is not doesn't mean in a moral sense of temptation or seduction. It's just, where is your attention? We are conditioned to allow ourselves to fall into the sleeping machine and to allow it to continue mechanically in sleep. We quickly learn to become whatever the machine becomes in its mechanical routine. Now, identification is not just a simple emotional attachment, a desire to be with somebody or something. It is actually the state. Listen here. When I read this earlier, I just thought it was so good. It is actually the state of falling into the same state as whatever it is we identify ourselves with, such as the human biological machine. So, like, what if we identify ourselves with our job and we just fall into that? We go to the job and we're all puffed up and we go, oh, yeah. And then we are the job. We are that. We are no longer an essential self operating in the world. We are that. So that's how the seduction works. The seduction works not because of an allurement as such, as much as we tend to give up our attention. We give it up. And that's where something different happens here. So now I'm very conscious of the time, too. But I'm now at the bottom of page 8, and I'm going to read through that paragraph real quickly, because it's worth listing these things out. Even a sleeping machine, here we go. We find ourselves in sleep. So even a sleeping machine can be used to overcome its own sleep because it has sensations. We can use these sensations to sense the sleep of the machine. This disarmingly simple idea can be performed as an experiment in which we try to use the sensations of the machine to sense the sleep of the machine. And from this experiment, we can see for ourselves in our own experience. This is a critical issue for me right now. It's really up for me. We can see in our own experience several important fact. These are things we can determine ourselves. First, the machine is really asleep. It's not just the human biological machines in general, but that our machine is asleep. It is possible to see and to even taste a little what life can be when the machine is not asleep, when it's awake. This can only, by exact and unusual methods, is possible to awaken the machine for any length of time. Then we will notice that there's an urgent necessity to begin our work by awakening the machine. Once you sense where you're at and we sense how this is operating, we will want to do something about it. It's axiomatic. We'll be compelled to, because once our eyes are clear, we can see our path for our particular work. Why only we are able to awaken. Yeah.
I just wanted to insert an example of the machine's sleep, waking up just a little bit. When I do body work with people, there's a number of people on the call who I've worked with who would very much relate to the experience of not being aware of emotions until certain sensations in the body occur, and as the body maybe opens and releases, then the emotions come to the fore, and then through sensation, we begin to sense what's going on inside ourselves and wake up a little bit. And I just thought that's an example that a lot of people will be able to relate to.
Great example. I certainly relate to it, and I relate to it directly because it's like, how could I possibly have those sensations and not have been aware of them? But the fact is that they are there, and when the right trigger comes along, boom, they make themselves very well known.
Or somebody can say something and we didn't know we were in pain, and all of a sudden there's tears in our eyes. And then we know that that was there in the background and we were unaware of it. It can be something so intense and so critical for us that someone just mentions something or like puts their hand on our shoulder or gives us a hug or says something kind, and maybe all of a sudden there's tears coming up and we didn't even necessarily know that we were in pain. So what kind of sleep is that? That's what we're talking about being asleep.
It is, and here's another interesting point about that. Because we have no tools in ordinary life to clarify ourselves, we have no tools when those, what would I say, arbitrary, miscellaneous, random emotions, reactions, they could be physical pains too, by the way,
Yes.
or mental thoughts. You might have a such and such happens, and you have always have the same thought and or emotions. Since we don't know what to do with them, what do we do in life then? We stay away from the areas where such a thing may be of difficulty to us. We don't want that to occur because we have no idea that it's even there, but it causes pain. And the thing about that I've never liked about pain is that pain hurts. So not the greatest thing. But I want to read one more of these and then we're going to jump ahead. We understand when we do this work and we stand that only we are able to awaken our own machines, that no one else can do our work for us. And that's kind of scary. We want someone else to do it for us, maybe. On the other hand, doesn't it give you a sense of freedom and a sense of, gosh, something can happen. I can do something here. I just think that part's cool. I'm going to jump ahead because I want to save some, I want there to be some conversation. Now I'm at page 11, and one method for awakening the machine is to intentionally concentrate the fullest possible attention of the source of attention upon the machine's activities. Okay. Self-study can now be more closely defined as the study of the motor centrum manifestations of the machine. This is the beginnings of all of our of this beginning work. Okay, what do we mean by that? Really simple. It's like right now, like when we did the thing with the dropping the facial mask, that was the will of your attention placing it on the way that that particular part of your musculature works. And what I say is, That is an enormous, that particular exercise or this comment right now where it says, is self-study can be closely defined as the study of the motor centrum manifestations of the machine.
So what is
that
the motor centrum? I'm sorry.
Well, just for simplicity's sake, it's just how you physically move about or your physical manifestations. Like right now, I'm opening my hand, closing my hand, opening it. Okay. Now, let's just say that whenever I talk, I always do that. That's a physical manifestation. So I could say, I could watch that. Now, if I actually watch it and pay attention to that, that's a very complex motion. Very complex. And as I pay attention to it, lots of stuff goes on inside me. And that activity in itself would be the example of self-study of the motor centrum.
Or an
Now,
activity like winding your hair around your fingers or picking at something or chewing your hangnails would be also a good example.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to that in a few chapters. But for right now, I want to just leave it extremely simple.
Okay.
But that's exactly right. That's a good exact what you're saying. I'm now on page 12. The idea was to keep the head brain so occupied that the ordinary process of linear associative thought were impossible. So when we pay attention to our physical state, our physical movements, the brain is just too occupied. It's too filled with that task that it can't go into the regular associative thinking that it loves to be dealing with. So we begin with simple observation. I mean, you can find your body, apparently, and that's not a bad thing to do. What I'd like to do, so if the very first exercise in a work community is observation of the moving activities of the machine with ordinary attention of the head brain, but to begin with, we must harness, so that's what we're going to try to do here. So I'm now on page 18 at the bottom. This is especially good inner exercise when performing physical labor such as digging ditches, painting, sanding, building, washing dishes, doing child care. For example, say your machine happens at this moment to be using the right arm to lift a cup of coffee. Observe the same time what's happening with your body. Where do you stand on your legs? And there's some conversation within the chapter about noticing the centrum of gravity, by which is simply meant the physical centrum of gravity. As you move your arm, you'll notice that the centrum of gravity of you accommodate it. The machine does all these incredible things. Watch your hand as if it were a foreign object, but at the same time realize that it is an automatic part of the machine. It fiddles and fidgets by itself without your voluntary direction. Watch in astonishment as all by itself it picks up a fork. Note that now the machine is smiling. The hand straightens the knife and smooths the napkin and goes through all these other different things. Beginning with, this is the very last paragraph of the chapter, beginning with the observation of the machine's posture as a whole, as if studying a statue, focus first on the hands, the mask, torso, arms, legs. Try to see the activities of the machine as a whole unit. For instance, observe your posture sitting at a table, writing in a notebook, walking through a cafe. Begin with the most obvious and observable postures and movements. For the moment, till you are very skilled, leave alone the delicate and more subtle fluctuations. So I guess the point that maybe as an exercise that we can do together during the next week, and this is what I mean by practical work on self, is maybe there's something that a physical exercise you know you're going to do every single day. Like I used to have a job where I wore a tie to work every day, and I'd get up, you know, in this blurry state of consciousness, go through a bunch of stuff, and suddenly I'd be in front of this mirror with a tie, and somehow my hands would tie the darn thing. It's really a complex motion. And at one point I clicked into this, you know, I thought to watch them, and I was like amazed at how wonderful my hands were. I just thought they were just the cat's pajamas. I thought they were great, that they could just tie the tie. It was so cool. But I was watching them from a different perspective. And so if anybody has such a thing that they do, maybe it's maybe they cook a dinner or something, or they always make a particular kind of a smoothie drink with a machine, and how you go about doing it. Suddenly, instead of just doing it to get it done, watch your physical manifestations. Watch how the hands move. Watch what the body does. You start to watch it. And maybe if we can pick some of those for each other or ourselves or announce that, and just watch it during the week, and then at the beginning of next week's class, we can just say how it went for you. And that'll help everybody, and everybody will have like a little bit of a data feed from everybody else. And so we all work together for everybody in this case. So I don't know if anybody has any questions, and or if they'd like to say what they think they are going to do with their exercise and how they might do it in the coming week. I'd appreciate it if you would say.
Or questions from the chapter. Having read the chapter. Or questions that came up having read the chapter ahead or having listened to the reading.
Yeah, any questions that you have, or if you just want to declare, I'm going to do the exercise in this manner this week, that's cool too.
So if you have questions, then you can just hit *6 and unmute yourself, or if you'd like to make a comment.
And the people that are online, they can, if they would do the same thing, I'd appreciate it. They could just type it into the log, and someone will read that out, and I can announce it as well. So I kind of said what mine's going to have to do with tying my shoes. I don't wear my shoes except when I go out, but I'm going to do it. What's it going to be like when I tie the shoes? That's my exercise this week, and I'll report back next week about what I noticed, if I can remember to do it.
Hey, it's Diana. Can I ask a question?
Please.
Sure. Great, Diana.
At one point, EJ refers to the fact that there's a definite deadline for our work, and if we miss the opportunity now, we may not be able to make these efforts later. What is he talking about?
That's an excellent question.
Is that in chapter 1, do you think?
I know it is. Page 9, I circled it. Bottom of page 9.
Okay, so all of us...
Sorry, I should probably... I apologize. I should have been more clear in my question.
No, you're fine.
No. You're very clear. And so that's page 9, and after we start to do some of this work on ourselves and see that the sleeping machine exists, we also notice, as in this list of things on page 9, that there is a definite deadline for our work, and if we miss this opportunity now, we may not be able to do these efforts later. I don't really know the answer to that. I mean, that comes up in HBM, too. He discusses that. But here's how I've answered it for myself, and maybe others can chime in as well. If you don't start doing something at some point, certain habits and viewpoints about life become crystallized in your head.
And your body.
Like crystallized, certainly in your body, in your head, and in your emotions. By crystallized, that means there's no flexibility in them to change. And if that crystallization runs too deep, it's not possible to generate this fresh ground of use of the will of attention.
I think it's more than that.
Not a linear point. This does not say, well, if you're not doing something at this age, then it doesn't work. It's more of an inner state. But go ahead, Teresa.
I think that there are certain time windows that happen in our life. In my work, when I'm working with intuitive skills, I notice that there are certain changes and certain opportunities that we each have that come up, and some have short windows and some have longer windows of time where we have to perform them. Well, it's the option is still on the table. It's almost like the universe holds out a possibility and we have choice. And for maybe a long period of time we have choice, and then at some point that window starts to close, and if we're attentive to the energetics of that, we can begin to feel the opportunity gradually or maybe even quickly moving away from the table and off the table. And at that point, then we're not able to make the same response. We can't get aligned with that in our life anymore.
There's a couple of comments that are from the online on the chat, and I'd like to make those as well.
Yes.
And so go ahead. Here's Ken. Okay. Now, the answer is coming from online. First of all, before we read that, Diana, did that partially or help you in answering that question?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Now, there's several people online who have indicated how they're going to do the exercise this week, and I'd like to read those. Okay. So one person said, I'm going to watch myself while I'm cooking. Making tea in the morning. Brushing my teeth. Driving the same route to work. Doing laundry. Placing my t-shirt on first thing in the morning, feeding the animals, loading and unloading the dishwasher. Oof. Okay. So the objective, here's a comment from Silverdale online, and Silverdale says, the objective is to have the non-phenomenal part of yourself observe the physical part of yourself as it passes through the day. Gradually, this begins to be like watching your physical self in a movie. Those are the only comments from the online folks at the moment. So it sounds like we're going to have that's some interesting things that people say they're going to want to do. So there they, what individuals have done, they've declared themselves, okay, I'm going to watch that particular activity, because if we delimit our efforts to something that specific, then we have a measurable way of seeing how the will of attention and the will of the essential self comes to bear in this activity. That's all. Okay. So are there any other questions on Chapter 1, or if anybody else would like to say what they're going to do, that would be okay.
Yeah, it's Diana again. I have another question.
Good.
Great.
EJ, if I read him correctly, was talking about one brain versus three brains, and he was saying, you know, how we've been talking about we primarily stay in the mind. I really didn't understand how he was explaining our lower brain, like our physical fulcrum, if that was operating activity, how it was operating properly.
I'd like to speak to that one.
Yeah, Teresa, you'd be great with the body worker. Please, I didn't quite understand it.
Well, the way that I understand it, which may or may not be exactly what EJ meant, I have an example that I like to think about that with. When he's talking about reversing the head brain with the tail brain, and bringing the energy and attention to the tail brain. The tail brain has to do with movement and sensation. So what I like to think about is, you know those guys who do martial arts who can take on 6 or 8 people at one time, those Aikido masters?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
How do they do that? They do that because they get to the point where after practice and practice and practice, watching and attending to body movements and body sensations and energy in a very, very fine-tuned manner, they at some point get to a point where they suspend the thinking of the mind and they go into the quote-unquote thinking of that physical brain, which has the capacity to execute all of those movements, and sometimes maybe even as if they were moving in slow motion in their own perception, and they're like handling one person after one thing after the other that's coming at them. And I believe that the way they can do that is because they've moved their attention down into the tail brain for such a long time, and the head brain is quiet and it isn't interfering. And at that point, you have a very different experience of movement and thought and emotion. David?
Yeah, and I think that can work in the physical realm and the mental realm. That whole part, Diana, of the chapter, which I not so deftly just skipped over, you know, I didn't get into it. It's a broad conversation. The way we are operating right now isn't the proper manner. The way that Teresa was talking about it in terms of the body, or the way a poet might just spin off a haiku, is more, then it's operating more properly, and that there's more of a spontaneity that is occurring in that case. The first steps towards changing that modality is to the laborious work of physically observing the physical movements of the machine. It seems like, oh, anybody can do that. Well, I don't know. Take a shot at it.
Well,
if
you're starting with martial arts, you're just starting with paying attention to where your gravity is and where your gravity is over your feet, and maybe very, very simple exercises, and you're taking one small thing at a time and paying attention to that and beginning to pay attention to the way that you move in more and more complicated ways. But it starts with very, very simple exercises.
And that's the exercise before us today, is the simple exercise of working with paying attention to the physical movement using our attention, our will of attention, on our body as we go through our week this coming week. Now, we had kind of said it's 1 hour, and
I thought
I'd
we
like
said an hour and a half.
Didn't
we say an hour and a half? Or did we say? That's
we
what we have.
An hour and a half on the fly.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've said that all along.
Oh.
I wonder why you were so rushed.
Well, that's why. well, all right. Are there any other questions then about Chapter 1 and what that exercise might be?
So feel free to put *6 if you want to unmute and speak up. And Diana, it's okay to ask as many questions as you want. Your participation is enjoyed.
Okay.
Great. Really wonderful to hear you.
Thank you both.
Very strange thing to be sitting here speaking like this, because I'm in a vacuum in a certain way. You know, I don't know who's online and what they're doing, and I certainly don't know if there's more than two or three or four people on the telephone. So
we have
six
people besides you and I.
I work as well as I can. Besides you and I?
Six people besides you and I on the telephone.
Okay. So I work as well as I can with what I have. This is what the way we're working tonight. If we were together in the physical space, we would have other opportunities. So we use the tools we have, and we have to thank Teresa for bringing us this teleconference, because I think it's really cool. And then we've been working with Adjustin TV for a while. But anyway, okay, so it sounds like we're pretty set on Chapter 1. Does that make sense to you, Teresa? Do you have any questions? Or anything you think we should say that I haven't said about?
Yes, I would like to ask everybody whether I'm asking everyone, say, hey out there, everyone, what experience do you have of being asleep? Have you ever caught yourself asleep? And what does it feel like, or what did you notice when you suddenly noticed that there was a whole area of your awareness that you weren't attending to, and all of a sudden you noticed something about yourself or about your sensations or about your feelings or thoughts that you really hadn't known were there, and then all of a sudden you knew? I said that a little awkwardly, but if anyone had an experience like that, that would be very interesting and helpful to all of us to hear about that. So if you have the courage to unmute and talk about that, that would be great. I know I was talking to David the other day on the phone, and somehow we were talking about something that I didn't think I had a big emotional charge on, and he asked me a question, and all of a sudden it was almost like breaking through the ice on a lake and coming into a whole set of feelings that was underneath what I had on the surface, and I was living more on the surface in that moment. And so that was a little surprise, and I actually enjoyed that surprise, because I felt like, even though I felt startled and it was uncomfortable, it was like a little awakening. And I think that a lot of the experiences that we avoid, or the experiences that we resist, or even sometimes our pain, can be used for awakening. So if someone has something to say, then interrupt me. I'm going to talk for just another minute here if no one unmutes. So one of the things that I've been doing lately in my own personal practice of awakening is to try and use the experience of pain for something useful, which is to embrace it and pay attention to exactly how it comes up for me and where I go with it, and what it begins to wake up inside me, and to try and pay attention to what's underneath that sensation of pain by opening to it and relaxing it and making room for it. And I've noticed that I hurt a lot less if I don't resist that sensation and I go along with it, and then I learn something about my interior and that process. So anybody who's had any kind of experience that's begun to wake them up a little bit, or make them feel more alive in your body or your heart or just your awareness. I know you're out there, you're hiding. We can end early tonight if there's not a lot of discussion, too. So, David has...
One of the things before we end is that I'd like to also say that next week we're going to be discussing Chapter 2. So I strongly encourage everyone that has the book to read chapter two? And if they don't have the book, did you actually record that and have that available to listen to?
Yes, chapter two is recorded, and it's at the website. The website is positiveenergyguide.com/PWOS. And if you haven't done so, it would also be great to have you put your name and email in the box on that page so we can get a dedicated list in case we have announcements, like I know at one point David has to miss a session, so we'll want to postpone.
I want to just take 1 minute and say what the next chapter two is.
All right.
Now, we did do chapter two a little bit. It's chapter two is the pond. The machine has no real emotion. What we call emotions in ourselves are just automatic reflexes of the mental centrum to the motor centrum's organic reverberations. Removing the effects of these reverberations eliminates in ourselves the larger part of our negativity and mechanical suffering. Take some time to read through the chapter. It's not miserably long. It's like 10 pages or so, or
miserably
14
long.
Maybe. But it's really packed full. I will spend a fair amount of time on the material next week as well, and it will require us to come up with an exercise. And I'd like to press all of us to come up with an exercise that we're going to do because then everybody benefits. It's all the people that are online. There's like 17 people online or something like that. And everybody on the phone call, we all benefit if we all do the work together and then share the results. It's a common pool of information that we can work together. So
I would also like to invite everybody to write down questions that come up. It's much more rich if we have more discussion and interaction now that we can do this with the phone. And I know you're not accustomed to it yet. It's okay to hide in the corner if you want to, but it's also, I think, the more that we participate, the more that we get out of the time together. And so when you're reading, if you don't understand something that you're reading, feel free to write down that question and then bring it to the next.
Teresa, are you there?
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah. Didn't
you
hear
say
me?
It's okay? Go ahead.
I said it's okay to write down your questions, any questions that you have while you're reading that come up as you're reading the book by yourself, and then bring them to class.
I thought you said it was okay for me to hide in the corner.
That applies to everybody but you, David.
I see.
Were you feeling like coming? Okay.
Thanks, everybody, for coming tonight and participating. And I look forward to seeing you again next week. We both look forward to seeing you next week.
And feel free to share the book or the website or the sound files on the website with friends or other people who might be interested in them. That would be great. And again, just watch yourself gently or with focused attention, and any questions or experiences that come up or little aha moments, it would be a delight to hear about them next time. All right.
Thank you much.
That's it for tonight.
Thank you.